You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Victory Monday. What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On. You can get 20% off of your next order. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And today we are going to recap the Vikings' resounding 34-20 win over the Detroit Lions. This was a game that never dipped, at least according to ESPN's win probability thing, never dipped below 75% chance for the Vikings to win this one. It was pretty much over before it started, and a blowout is very good. This was a game that was boring by the middle of the third quarter. That's exactly the kind of way you want to win a game, especially against a division rival at home. You want to take it to them. So we'll kind of spend some time recapping the game, some of the game, the narratives that we had going into the game, and we'll talk about some of the more nitty-gritty stuff that at least we could see just like on the live watch, which of course we'll go on Wednesday in and examine some of that stuff a little bit more quickly. But first, let's just go over the broad strokes. The Vikings win this game 34-20 with a win probability that never sinks below 75%. This is, by every definition of the word, a blowout. And much like last week's win against Green Bay, this one was spurned by Dalvin Cook, who had 206 yards on the ground, 46 through the air, and really spurned a lot of the production for the Vikings. And it was kind of, he was kind of able to keep pace with what the Lions were doing. And the defense, I think, played better than what we expected from them, which is really nice. Unlike the game against Green Bay, Kirk Cousins was asked to do a little bit more in this one. He had a reasonable day. 13 for 20 for 212 yards. Those are meager numbers, but there were three touchdowns in there, so he did have a good role in like punching it in the red zone, and only took one sack. So Kirk Cousins had a very good avoid disasters kind of day, which does call on somebody else to win the game for you. Thankfully, there was somebody else on the team to answer that call, and this is a formula that has now notched two divisional wins for the Vikings. Things are kind of starting to pick up. They're starting to sort of figure out who they are, figure out their identity. Even on defense, they're starting to get a little bit of an identity. If you look at social media after the game of Hercules Mataafa and Jaleel Johnson, all these guys, they're kind of starting to rally around the clown emoji Hercules Mataafa thing, which if you missed it, Hercules was cut from the team, put on the practice squad, activated again, just some, you know, kind of classic roster shuffling stuff. But when he was cut, he tweeted out a clown emoji, probably because he was upset over being cut, and deleted it immediately, but it became kind of a whole thing. And then when he came back, he kind of leaned into it, into the clown emoji thing and the clown brand. And now that Hercules Mataafa is back and they've moved him to edge rusher instead of having him rush up the inside, and that's actually worked out better. I think he's been playing better there at edge than he ever did on the inside, like making him, you know, the smallest nose tackle in the world. Now that that's working out a little bit better, he's feeling a little bit, and he's starting to, you know, use the clown emoji more kind of ironically, and other teammates are joining in, and that's the kind of identity thing that's, I mean, they're having fun, and if you look at the sideline, you know, you're blowing the doors off of a division rival, and a division rival that had a lot to say going into this game, but you see him having fun and getting a little bit of juice, and even Mike Zimmer said, you know, hey, you know, you beat Green Bay when nobody thinks you're supposed to, that gives you a little juice. Now you come in and you blow out this team, gives you a little more juice, and now they feel like they can maybe spark a turnaround, and they kind of maybe can. They're 3-5 right now. There's seven teams that get to go to the playoffs in the NFC, and they really just need to leapfrog like two or three more teams before they're actually in playoff position, and there's a lot of time left to do that. So if they can keep this turnaround happening and keep playing well, they might be able to claw their way back into this season and become a member of postseason football. And right now, that has to be the goal. To revisit some of the narratives coming into this game, of course, there was a lot of ink spilled over Everson Griffin's comments before the game, Jaron Curse's comments before the game. Even Adrian Peterson had some things to say before the game, although he was mostly just looking forward to playing against his old teammates, like in a fun fun way, and he like really wanted to get a win in US Bank Stadium. He didn't. He's now 0-3 as a non-Viking in US Bank Stadium, but he was, of all of the people, the one stirring up the least drama, I guess. Jayron Kearse had a lot to say. He had a lot. He had a fairly bitter exit from Minnesota. Minnesota never had him start. He wanted to start. They didn't pay him the way he wanted to, and he had a lot to say on social media about that. Even, you know, and even when he would like find Vikings fans talking about him after he left, he said, "Oh, we're going to see Week 9 and even tweeted out something over the week that was like, "Ah, oh, they told me to enjoy losing in Detroit." And boy, oh boy, like when the Vikings were 1-5 or whatever. So he certainly had plenty of thoughts going into this one. And then there was, of course, the whole thing with Everson Griffin and Mike Zimmer saying, "Oh, he was a good player for us." And then Everson Griffin getting extremely upset that he said good and not great. And Zimmer did clarify, but by then it was already bulletin board material. And Everson Griffin, total non-factor in this game. He didn't play every snap. He's still in a rotational role, which is exactly how the Cowboys used him, so that's not particularly surprising. Jayron Kearse did start due to injury. He also didn't have too much impact on this game. Kearse did have 8 tackles in the game, although as a member of the secondary, that's not necessarily a good thing. Everson Griffin only had 3 tackles. You would kind of hope for that to be the other way around if you were the Lions, but this was not a good defensive performance for the Lions, and the revenge game narratives did not go that great. Honestly, of all of the revenge game people that the Lions had in this game, I would say the best one was either Adrian Peterson or Justin Coleman, who was technically on the 90-man roster for a while for the Vikings. And Adrian Peterson had like an okay game, but was clearly outplayed by the other two running backs on the team. And honestly, the best revenge games came from the Vikings, who are former Lions. Riley Reiff had a very good day, except for one holding penalty, at least upon first glance. And Amir Abdullah had a great screen touchdown, which is his first touchdown of the year against his old Lions. So I think the fear of a juiced up Lions team looking for revenge, I think those fears were perhaps a bit exaggerated. And all in all, this game will be remembered for not much. It was a pretty forgettable game between, you know, two kind of small market teams, neither of which are probably really seen as the elite or worth watching or whatever. This is kind of one of those that the networks tuck away and hope you only catch on NFL Sunday Ticket. But if this game will be remembered for anything, it's going to be because Dalvin Cook just blew out another defense that wasn't ready for him. And it's really, really nice to see this continue, even though teams kind of know that this is what the Vikings are going to lean on. You know, you even had Matt LaFleur complain about it after the Packers game, say we knew exactly what they were going to do and we couldn't stop it. And now Matt Patricia came in and he knew exactly what the Vikings were going to do and he couldn't stop it either. And it's very nice to see the Vikings kind of they're not catching people off guard. They're just beating them. So now you have to kind of face the final boss of NFC North rush defenses, which is the Bears. You have to face them next week, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's talk a little bit about this Lions game, how it went down, and some of the themes that are worth recapping. But perhaps there's something to kind of accomplishing the easy goals before you can accomplish the hard goals. And when you're working out, I think that's a good way to approach it, right? Do what you know you can do and then push it. And when it comes to getting or staying in shape, nothing feels as good as that feeling of accomplishment when you finally hit that goal and you feel great about yourself. Echelon can get you there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their all new Stride smart treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of home. Their world-class instructors will motivate you with thousands of daily live and on-demand studio level classes always available when you need them. And unlike their competitors, Echelon is affordable for everyone. And one membership lets up to 5 family members work out all at the same time. So right now you can try Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days. Go to echelonfit.com/LONFL. That's echelonfit.com/LONFL. All right, so the game started out very favorably for the Vikings. The Vikings were actually favored in this game because the Lions are struggling a whole bunch and it's at home and stuff like that. So the Vikings actually started with pretty high win probability and it only got better from there because on their first drive, they go down, score a touchdown. And in the first quarter, the Vikings scored very, very well. They were up 13-0 in this game. And the second quarter did not go as well. They had a couple of pretty poor offensive series. They let the Lions drive down on them a lot. Luckily, there was a missed field goal, and they ended up still being 13-10 headed into the final drive of halftime. And I want to talk about that final halftime drive because they had the ball with, call it like a minute 30 left. They were up 13-10. Should have been 13-13 if the field goal wasn't missed. And you kind of felt like the game was at least on a little bit of even footing in that moment. And it could have kind of gone either way. But that final drive before halftime was really, really well managed. And it's kind of interesting because they run the ball on the first drive. I mean, you're in a 2-minute drill. You're running the ball and you're letting time waste off the clock. So immediately everybody starts screaming, oh my God, what are they doing? Why are they letting all this time off the clock? And I'll get to the point of that, because that is a purposeful strategy. They're not just like dawdling, right? They're taking that time off because they want that time off the clock. But then they actually had two run plays in this 2-minute drill. But the second one actually ended up being a really big Dalvin Cook run that ends up going out of bounds. Kirk Cousins has a couple of really nice throws, and they run a nice no huddle, and they end up scoring on a 30-some yard Amir Abdullah screen pass with roughly 20 seconds left in the half. So when you punt or when you kick back to the Lions after that score, they don't actually have a chance to like score back on you. And that's because the Vikings made an effort to not score too fast. You know, if you know they're playing prevent, you know, if you're going to go down and score in a 2-minute drill, it is likely not going to take much time off the clock. They had all three timeouts. They've got the sideline. They can do out of bounds. They can do no huddle and all that stuff. You have a whole bunch of ways to conserve clock, but you don't have a lot of ways to take time away from your opponent once it's time to punt away from them. So while you have the ball, take some of that clock off as well. You know, if the Lions still had, you know, 40, 50 seconds left, the Lions took all three of their timeouts into the locker room with them. If they had 40, 50 seconds and all three timeouts, that's a whole drive. Now you have to make a stop. The Vikings in this case did not have to make a stop. So their clock management denied the Lions a possession. You can look at that kind of thing almost as a turnover in and of itself, or at least, you know, a good stop that was just created by doing the clock right. This is something that I think Andy Reid gets a lot of flack for. I think he gets way too much hate about his like clock management, because a lot of times he's trying to score and be the last person with the ball. You know, if you think about this as an end game situation, if you're in a situation where you're in the final couple minutes of a game and you need a touchdown, you know, you're down 4 points or whatever, you want to go down and score, but you want to be the last. You want this to come down to your scoring opportunity. You don't want to have to score and then make a stop. So take up a little bit more time. Let some time bleed off the clock. 40 seconds, three timeouts, and you're at midfield. That's forever. There was absolutely no pressure. And the Vikings, like, time and like the clock restraints outside of what you kind of have to do for being in a 2-minute drill in the first place, they weren't really that constrained by time. They had their timeouts, so they could still use the middle of the field. They didn't have that long of a field to go because the first couple of plays went really well. So they didn't have to, they didn't have to like do Hail Marys or throw anything really deep. The Lions probably should have been playing normal defense, although they were playing really, really soft coverages with which the Vikings exploited. But the Lions didn't like have to. But, you know, yeah, I think the Vikings could play whatever type of football they wanted, regardless of the clock, because they have 40 seconds, three timeouts. That's plenty. So instead, they brought it to a point where they could go score, and that screenplay, I mean, they didn't like plan to score exactly then, but they had like 20 seconds, right? After that screenplay, they probably would have had two or three end zone shots, kick a field goal if you end up getting a fourth down anyways, and you would have been made in the shade. And instead they score, but it's still only like 20 seconds. Lions don't get a chance, and you did your job. So they go into halftime, and they also get the chance to double dip because they get the ball back. They don't end up scoring on that, but they do end up, after trading punts and the Lions go down and get a field goal, they do end up getting a pretty good drive that was set up by a pass interference in the end zone. Really, really blatant pass interference. It was the kind of thing of, oh my God, I'm in terrible position. He's totally going to get me on this, and I might as well tackle him instead of giving up the touchdown, and maybe we can get a stop on first and goal. They couldn't get a stop on first and goal. Gary Kubiak schemed up a wonderful fake split zone thing. If you don't know, split zone is like a run play where you have a tight end come across the formation to block a defensive end on the backside of the play. And it allows you to get a tight end on a defensive end. So you could have Irv Smith block Khalil Mack, and it sets up angles where that can work for you. And that's a great way to, you know, you could say, oh, well, I only had to spend Irv Smith to get rid of your Khalil Mack, and now you have an advantage on the rest of the play. This is a staple of every zone scheme. So what the next kind of evolution of that is to now do play action split zone. And instead of that tight end who's coming across the formation, in this case, Irv Smith, just blocking someone, they sift through the guy. They go past the guy they're supposed to block, and they're actually running a flat route, like a leak out flat route. And it's a play action, totally fools everybody. Irv Smith is alone. And what's great on that play is that nobody on the play had to be good. Nobody had to beat anybody. Nobody had to be anything more than a replacement level football player for that play to be a touchdown. That's how you know the scheme was good. Kirk Cousins didn't have to do anything. He took the snap and he flipped one up to a wide open guy. Irv Smith, he didn't have to beat anybody on a route. He didn't have to, go get open. He didn't have to outplay anybody. He just had to not drop the pass. The pass was quick enough that the offensive line didn't have to do too much, and the play action of it actually made it so the offensive line didn't have to, many of the offensive linemen didn't engage with somebody at all, and nobody else was targeted on the play. So nobody, Dalvin Cook just had to go pretend to have the football. Like, nobody had to do anything particularly impressive for that to be a touchdown, and I would bet that they would like it, that they like it that way, and they take it that way every single time. That makes it 27-13. Lions get a 3-and-out. They kick it back to the Vikings, and the Vikings get a, on the first play of the next drive, Dalvin Cook breaks off a 70-yard touchdown, and that's the dagger, and the game goes down from there. And that 70-yard touchdown was very good, using something we don't see a lot of out of the Vikings, but I'm going to table that, and when we come back, I'll explain what I mean by that, so stick around. Before we get into all of that, I want to talk to you about Built Bar. Built Bar is back, and even deliciouser than ever. They have 12 of your favorite original old flavors, like double chocolate, peanut butter brownie, German chocolate, raspberry, coconut almond, if you're a coconut kind of guy. They also have 6 new flavors, like caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, and they are way healthier than all that stuff sounds. They are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're even keto friendly. Let's give you an example. That coconut almond one, 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. So if you want to try Built Bar for yourself, you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off of your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. All right, so of course that's a weird thing to mention. The Vikings run game was not the classic zone run game we usually see, and I'm really, really interested to dive further into this, but it looked to me, at least on first glance, that the Vikings ran a whole bunch of power concepts. So here's the thing about run schemes. There's kind of two main schools of thought. There's also Gap, which kind of combines these two. But there's zone schemes like what the Vikings run, where the general rule is you block the guy in front of you. If you're covered by a defensive lineman, you block that defensive lineman, no matter who it is. And if you are uncovered by a defensive lineman, then you climb to the second level and you block whatever linebacker is supposed to be in that gap. Whereas power schemes, man-to-man schemes, are offensive line schemes where you assign somebody to a person. And the advantage of that versus, the zone scheme, one, it's very simple. It's easy to learn. You just block the guy in front of you. Simple enough, right? And then you can kind of add wrinkles onto that as people get comfortable. But it also kind of allows you to counter things like twists or stunts or weird stuff where, oh, now a different guy's in front of me because he did something weird. Well, now I'll just block that guy instead. And you pass people off and stuff. And it tends to simplify the more complex elements of offensive line play, which can be really helpful, especially to a struggling unit. Power requires a lot more, but it allows you to do a lot more complex things if you're like the Colts, who have like Quentin Nelson. The Vikings ran a ton of power back in their like prime Adrian Peterson days when you had Jerome Felton and Steve Hutchinson and John Sullivan in his prime and all these guys, Phil Loadholt and all those. And the advantage of that is that you can very deliberately have people block somebody other than the person in front of them. So this is where you get a lot of pulling guards. If you have Quentin Nelson on your team, instead of just having him climb up to a linebacker, you can say, actually, you pull over to the other side of the formation and be the lead blocker on this. And how about that's a terrifying thing? You're a linebacker trying to make your tackle and Quentin Nelson is bearing down on you. And that's kind of how the Colts run game tends to work because you have those players. Well, the Vikings usually run zone because they don't have a Quentin Nelson, but this week, they ran a ton of power concepts. They ran like a guard tackle counter. They ran they ran a lot of like you saw a lot of guards and tackles pulling to the other side of the formation, guys switching around and kind of being a little bit trickier. I'm really curious about that because it worked, right? So this is a good this obviously had to have been at least somewhat of a good decision because it really really killed the Lions. My running theory, and I guess I have to look into it more, but my running theory is that the Colts power run game worked really well against the Lions. I didn't look too much at that game, so I'm just kind of guessing, and I reserve the right to rescind this opinion. If the Colts were able to put up 41 on the Lions using this kind of run game, maybe the Vikings saw that and said, well, hey, if we can just ask Ezra Cleveland to pull as a power guard, and boy, he can certainly get there quickly, right? He might not have the actual, like, power, you know, he might not have the strength to like push somebody the way he's supposed to, but he can at least get in the gap very quickly. And hopefully Dalvin Cook can make something out of that. Maybe we'll just ask him to do that this week. So my guess is that this is a very Lions specific thing and not necessarily like a change in their scheme on the whole. That wouldn't make a lot of sense at all. His own scheme is perfect for the personnel they have. And it's also like the dominant scheme in the league right now. This is the scheme that Sean McVay uses. This is the scheme that Matt LaFleur and the Packers use. You know, the Titans use it. I think they're what, like 6-2 or something like that. You know, this is a scheme that is kind of dominating the league. And, the joke that I've had is if you want to have a good offense, either run the zone scheme or have like a Patrick Mahomes. So it would be very surprising to me if the Vikings were moving away from that scheme. I don't think that would be a good idea. But in this particular case against this particular opponent, if you saw somebody blow the doors off them with these plays and then you go ask your players to run those plays, that does kind of make a little bit of sense. And it would also kind of obfuscate some tape study for future opponents. Now the Bears are going to watch this game and go, wait, do we have to prepare for power now? And if they waste valuable practice time preparing for power, but the Vikings won't run power because the Bears don't die to power like the Lions did, then, you know, you might actually get some residual effect here. And that's the sort of the cat and mouse, the chess game of week to week preparation and coaching in the NFL. But yeah, it's a very interesting choice that they made. And I'm really curious to look more into it. And I hope somebody asks the Vikings eventually why they did it, if, you know, maybe see if they'll divulge something for us. But that, I think, might be the story of the game, is that the Vikings ran a system that they aren't particularly familiar with because it was the right system to run for the situation. And they put up like almost 300 yards on the ground. Alexander Mattison had 69 yards of his own in addition to the like 205 or whatever Dalvin Cook had. So they were pushing 300 rushing yards. Whatever they did worked great, and they should do it again next time they play the Lions, but they probably shouldn't just rely on this forever, because eventually they're going to find that they don't have the horses to run this kind of scheme game in and game out. But there are a couple other things that I want to talk to you about while I still have some time. First, we have to talk about the blocked punts. So the Vikings had two blocked punts in this one, and luckily those drives, I think, only ended up in 3 points total for the Lions. They weren't able to capitalize on those short fields, but the Vikings still allowed two blocked punts. So let's talk about them. The first one came from Mike Boone, who had a very poor cut block. So he tries to dive at the guy's ankles, you know, and he totally misses. He doesn't get nearly enough length, and the special teams player is able to kind of get all the way around, get the blocked punt. Thankfully, because Mike Boone had dove, and the way the ball bounced after being blocked, the ball kind of landed like in a place where Mike Boone was the first and only person to get an opportunity. So he was able to recover, and it didn't turn into just like a special teams touchdown. And he actually tried to he actually had enough time to pick it up, turn around, and see if he couldn't find an alley to get a wild fourth down conversion. Didn't get there. Lions got the ball. But it was interesting because he ended up kind of almost being the hero of the play, even though he was the one who caused the play to be that bad in the first place. And the second one came from Austin Cutting, who has been pretty bad. We kind of have to talk about the long snapper, and I hate that we have to talk about the long snapper. But, you know, I remember there was a mailbag question last week about like what's going on with Britton Colquitt. And I asked Chuck Zotta, who is kind of my go-to kicking guy. And he said, yeah, the snaps aren't good, and he's got to clean up the snaps better. But the long snapper is kind of, making Britton Colquitt reach too far for these snaps, and then he has to rush the rest of his process because he had to stretch out and like go make a leaping catch just to catch the snap, and then to actually get down and get set and stuff, he has to rush all that process, and then he's not punting as well. This again, there were some other like poor snapping problems. I believe there was there wasn't a bad snap on the missed extra point. I don't really know what happened on that one. The snap was turfed, but Britton Colquitt did manage to get it out and get it down, get the laces out and stuff. So Dan Bailey's timing wasn't disrupted by the snap in the hold on the extra point. But on the second blocked punt, Austin Cutting just didn't get his guy. He just got beat up the middle, and it was Romeo Okwara, who also got some pretty good pressure, almost got a strip sack in this one. He was somebody that we highlighted on Friday's show because he was such a poor mismatch for the way the Vikings line is built. He's such a power guy, and like that's the kind of guy that Brian O'Neill tends to struggle against. And he ends up getting a punt block in this one up against the long snapper. You know, he's got a snap and then block. Romeo Okwara gets up past him and gets the block again. And it's again lucky that they don't take that back for a touchdown. And I believe that was the one that ended up in an Eric Kendricks interception right afterwards. So punt protection, a huge issue in this one. But I think as Mike Zimmer tends to say, and I'm sure if he is asked, he would say this again, is that it's really nice to have to deal with those things during a win and have it not cost you a game. But now it's highlighted, you know, you can go fix it and you didn't have to pay a loss in the loss column to go do it. The other thing I want to talk about is the interceptions. The Vikings had 3 interceptions in this game, one from Eric Wilson, one from Eric Kendricks, and one from Harrison Smith that came off of Chase Daniel, who did come into this game. If you remember, there was some uncertainty over whether or not Stafford would play. He did play, although he left for a decent chunk of the fourth quarter in the concussion protocol after a particularly nasty sack, and he ended up coming back in, but Chase Daniel did play some, and he ends up sailing this horrendous interception over to Harrison Smith. The other two were, I mean, that was a free interception. Harrison Smith was not near the target. That target was actually very, very well covered. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting who actually was in coverage there, but the target was well covered, and it just sailed horribly on Chase Daniel. And Harrison Smith, who was, you know, 7 yards behind where the ball would have been caught, it ends up falling right into his lap. But the other two are more interesting. Eric Wilson made a great play on his interception. What was happening was there was a drag route that was coming all the way across the formation, horizontally across the field that he was carrying. And then in reading the quarterback's eyes, he passed off that drag route to the next person and sat back on a route that was supposed to be coming up behind. And I believe Eric Wilson was the read on that. So he basically made it look like he was going to carry a route all the way across the field. Then at the last minute, he backed off it and picked up the next one that was coming. And because it looked like he was going to carry the first thing all the way across the field, that would have meant that, I want to say it was TJ Hockenson, would have been open. But instead, Eric Wilson backed off. Matt Stafford was already throwing the ball and it was too late to stop it. And it was an interception. The second one, the Eric Kendricks one, was maybe even more impressive. This was at the goal line after the second blocked punt. And Eric Kendricks was manned up on, I think that one was TJ Hockenson. I forget who the actual target was supposed to be on the first one. But on that interception, he had to carry a route all the way. It was I believe a corner post, just a little like out and in kind of deal that was supposed to, you know, be a double move basically on a linebacker. You have TJ Hockenson, your star 8th overall pick tight end, and you've got him matched up one-on-one on a linebacker with a double move dialed up. You're going to that every single time, but Eric Kendricks covered it beautifully. And he was just like on him like glue. And this is now 2 games in a row where Eric Kendricks basically being a slot corner against something that he kind of has no business beating, beats it for a huge play. And Eric Kendricks did it like 3 times against Davante Adams last week. So he's Eric Kendricks just doing Eric Kendricks things, I suppose. And that ends up digging the Vikings out of a huge hole that could have really turned the tide of game that instead was relatively uninteresting. And that's exactly the way you want to win. We have a lot more to break down about this game. We'll have our Twitter Tuesday tomorrow, so keep an eye out today on Twitter, on my Twitter at LukeBraunNFL for my call for questions. And ask me whatever you want. And then, of course, on Wednesday, we'll have our Rewatch Wednesday, where we'll talk a little bit more about that power thing. I'm really curious to look into that. We'll talk about the defense, which I didn't talk about very much, but real quick, I thought the corners played okay. I thought everybody on defense kind of played okay, and a lot of these backups and rookies and stuff, I think, played better than we expected them to, but I think some of the other things were a little more interesting on a broad strokes level. We'll talk more about them on Wednesday, maybe even on Tuesday, and we'll get this thing wrapped up, and then, of course, later in the week, Thursday and Friday, we'll be talking about the Bears with Lauren Cox, and we'll talk about that cursed Monday night Soldier Field game the Vikings always lay an egg in. That'll be real fun. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. I will see you all tomorrow, and as always, Skol.